Are you ready for this? It's your all-out cricket pod blast. As Australia put the icing on the cake of the ODI series, Ben Stokes comes to the party at least, as Alistair Cook backs himself in the sack race, while the suits in Dubai play musical statues, we give the top five batsmen of all time the bumps. It's your all-out cricket pod blast. Yo, what a pleasure it is to be back on the All Out Cricket Pod Blast. Alex, it's your birthday. How's it feel?
It feels pretty good to be 23 again.
Oh, you're just edging closer to that 50, aren't you?
Horribly. I think 23 is the top score I've ever scored in cricket, in fact.
Wow.
Yeah, certainly never scored 32, which is what I am today. Hey, England have lost the ODI series 4-1. It's my birthday. I'll cry if I want to. I can't believe we lost 4-1. We should have won that series, shouldn't we, Joe Harmon?
We should have done. We just played that little bit better, and they played that little bit worse, then we could have seen that one home.
It is tantalising. You know what else is tantalising? Some of the content on this pod blast tonight, listener. That's right. We're going to have all sorts of analysis, first of all, of the ODI series. We've also got a few things from the magazine. What are they, Ross?
Oh, we're going to talk the big five. It's the big five cricketers who've retired in recent years.
Okay.
That would be a debating point, won't it, Al?
Sorry, you said big five. I'm thinking elephant. What is it? Cheetah?
Cheetah, yeah.
Giraffe?
Yes, that's
Water buffalo.
It'd be odd content for a cricket magazine, wouldn't it?
Well, you know, stranger things have happened.
That's right. You've got to fight for your readers nowadays. I hear it's tough out there. It's a jungle out there, in fact. Isn't it?
and we're gonna talk about writing our first piece.
Yes.
For the All Out Cricket magazine.
Yes, listener. I know that many of you have been anticipating this for a long time. When I heard you cry, when will they put
when
pen
are they
to paper?
Do it? When are they going to do it?
Write their minds.
And we did it.
And we've done it.
The products of our minds will be with you in
like
forthcoming issues.
It's like heavily edited. Yeah. I don't know who this stupid editorial team were that allowed us some sort of access to print. Oh, Joe Harmon, Phil Walker, how are you?
I'm very well, thank
you. Hello to both of you.
Happy birthday. Exhausted from proofing your work, but I'm not too bad.
God, it took a while, I imagine. Painful, like a birth.
Okay, ODI series. Let's take a quick jingle just to buzz things up even more
even
and then
more?
Go wading into the captaincy debate.
First of all, we're going to talk about the captaincy debate. Now, Alistair Cook was on pretty much the verge of stepping down as one-day captain, wasn't he, Joe? You've got an opinion on this, haven't you?
It did sound that way after, admittedly, one of the more demoralising defeats England have ever suffered, and there's been a few lately. But yeah, it did sound, he said, I think the phrase was England might need to look at maybe a time for change or some changes might be necessary. And yet that led people to assume he was talking about his own role,
himself.
Which I'm pretty sure he was at that point. But a win later, and he was feeling a bit chirpy about the fact, and now he's desperate to stay on. So I guess the question is, should he stay on? Is it a good thing for the team? And I would venture that it's not a good
can
thing
Can I pose
for the
a
team.
Question then?
Oh,
can
controversy
we start,
already. Go on,
can
now.
We start with his batting, Phil?
Mm-hmm.
Start with his batting. Is he good enough to be in the team
in
as a
one
batsman?
Day cricket? Well, he's... He's made 100 in the last 35 hits. He has
done your research.
I read it this morning because it is a big question. When Cook is when he's in nick and when he's in form and when his mind is right and when he's not encumbered by all the nonsense that swirls around being the captain, and when the pitch is good enough for him, then I think he can still score runs as a kind of as an anchor to a 50-over side. But the problem England have, as we well know, is that you have Bell alongside him, and then if Trott comes back, Trott probably slips into number three. If it's not Trott, then it's probably going to be someone like Root. And so you have very one-pace players up the top. When Cook is in nick, I still think he has a place in that 50-over side. I tend to lean with Joe, though, in regards to the captaincy. I think it may be of benefit to him and to the test team if he were to relinquish the reins for the 50 overs.
But it's all one and the same argument, isn't it, really? I mean, I'm not saying necessarily that I just don't think Cook is right as a captain. I just don't see how he makes that 11. And crucially, I don't see how he makes that 11 when they're building towards a World Cup to be played in Australia. You can't have a top three of Cook, Bell, route potentially. I just don't see that working. Mm. We've seen what Finch and Warner have done to England's attack. Fair enough, Bell can play his own way and play at his own pace, but I think actually the way Cook plays is having a negative effect on Bell as well, who's getting starts but then trying to force things too quickly when he should just be moving naturally through the gears, because that's the kind of batsman he is. So I would bring Peterson back in, open with him alongside Bell. Peterson's got an average of 43, 44 as an ODI. No, it was all going swimmingly before he balls it up and then got reintegrated. And by the time he'd done that, Cook had found out how to bat in one-day cricket. But for the balance of the side, I think Peterson's got to go up top there, particularly in Australia.
And it helps to have a ready-made replacement in Owen Morgan?
I think Owen Morgan looks... He's got that steely-eyed look, hasn't he? No, some of those old little Australian captains, isn't he? The weasel-eyed
This is the point I seek to make.
Yeah, go on.
He hasn't got a steely-eyed look. He's just got very little eyes.
That's the same thing, Al. That's the same thing.
It worked for Steve Waugh for 20 years.
Exactly, little eyes. That's where his power lies.
You become flinty, you become hard, you become intimidating. It's all about the size of your eyes. Cook's eyes are massive.
That's
true. They're too big for one-day cricket.
They are enormous. Can I put a shout in then for Ian Bell as captain?
No.
Also with tiny eyes.
Okay, on that basis, then, probably.
If it's purely on the size of his eyes, then he's about second, isn't he? Listen, I've heard a lot recently about Ian Bell being this great captain at county level. I've never heard that before. I mean, he seemed to me the last person, Joe Harmon, that you'd have as England cricket captain.
Well, apparently, tactically, he was very good. But as a leader of men, I don't really see Bell fitting that role. But Owen Morgan, I interviewed Niall O'Brien last week for a feature we do called Partnerships. So Niall O'Brien and Kevin O'Brien talking about their life growing up, what they've done for Irish cricket. And he was interesting on Owen Morgan, because he said actually Paul Sterling of the current crop, stroke for stroke, is as good a player as Morgan. But in terms of cricket now, Morgan is streets ahead of Sterling, and actually streets ahead of pretty much everyone O'Brien has played with in county cricket and with Ireland. So people who know Morgan think he can do the job well. People at Middlesex talk about him being not only a one-day captain, but a future test captain. Mm. Rob Smith was saying that on Crick Info the other day.
Obviously, form provided. We all remember the UAE. What's Stuart Broad done wrong, Phil Walker?
In regards to the captaincy debate?
Yeah.
I don't think he's done anything wrong, but I think it would be eccentric and uncharacteristic of England to give one of the big jobs to a fast bowler. It's just not the way that they go, I don't think. And for me, Morgan is the perfect man to step in there. I think he's smart. I think he's cool. And by that, I mean, I think he's level-headed. His reading of the game with the bat is excellent, always has been. And he's got guts as well, you know. He's a big match player. His record against Australia, for example, and those games are always ramped up, bigger than the rest. His record in one-day cricket against Australia is brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
And I like him. Whenever I've dealt with him personally, I've always been really impressed by him. And I think it would be kind of exciting, and England would, there would be kind of an invigoration, you know, behind
England's one-day cricket needs a kick up the arse, doesn't it? Yeah. They're still playing like teams played 4 or 5 years ago. The way they packed the batting, had Butler at 8 in the first ODI, which is just ridiculous. Mm. He faced 120 balls in the whole series. Which is just, it's not enough.
It's given a strike rate, and we've got problems with strike rate. It just seems madness, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. I thought Owen Morgan was incredibly impressive in the post-match interview he did after England's loss in the fourth game.
Yeah.
Talking very frankly about the fact that it wasn't good enough. But can I be a little more optimistic? Ross and I have been discussing this for a little while. I know England lost 4-1, but I think this is the equivalent of the Australia Ashes loss last summer in England. I think England are learning... have learned a hell of a lot for the World Cup next year. Mm. And they've got a load of players who in about a year's time, if they play those other intervening tours, might be really useful.
Yeah, overall I tend to agree with you. I've felt this with the ODI team for 3 or 4 years, that I think it's a sleeping giant of a team. And I haven't written off Cook as a one-day player. I just think in regards to the captaincy, I think there's so much on his plate at the minute and it threatens to affect his whole game. And we have here a record-breaking world star batsman. He's made 10 test matches, his highest score is 70. I think he needs a break. I think the ODI stuff is the thing to go from that equation. And I think Morgan coming in will just energise the thing again. But I tend to agree with you. If you think that we have in Stokes something special, we have Butler coming in last 10 overs, there's something wonderful going on there potentially as well. There's a youngish pool of players.
Chris Jordan as well.
Jordan's come in and impressed. They're clearly one or two players light, but I think there's a lot more going on there than people may think when they just look at the results.
What about you, Joe? What I mean, James Treadwell's going to be England spinner this time next year,
well,
isn't
he? Well, that's probably the concern, because he does a really solid job in holding up an end, but he went wicketless in this series, albeit he only played the last three games. And England have got to basically make a decision whether they're happy just to have a holding spinner or whether they want something more. England are probably, sounds a bit bizarre given their recent record in Australia, but quite lucky that they're playing the World Cup in Australia. Right. I think that could suit them and their team quite well. If they're playing in the subcontinent, I wouldn't give them a hope, because they haven't got either the method of playing spin or the spinners to...
Yeah. Mm. You know who's in there who they're considering a holding spinner? You know, Samit Patel's form for Notts last year, his ODI record... The telephone's ringing.
Hello, Samit.
This is the bit when you're in class and you go, no, go ahead, Phil. No, take it. Go ahead.
Don't mind us.
Clearly, it's more important.
They'd ignore that on the switch hit. We bring it up. We recognise it and we move on. Other alternatives in terms of spinner? And indeed, at the top, is there another explosive batsman we're missing? I mean, I think...
Moeen Ali. Killing me.
I mean, he can do both roles, can't he?
Yeah. Well, Samit's an interesting one as well, though, because you could have... If Samit and Root are playing in that side, then you don't need a frontline spinner in Australia.
Mm. The one thing that they're obviously lacking at the moment is a key wicket-taking... game-changing bowler.
It's Finn, isn't it?
Finn, he is the boy. This is exactly what I was coming to say. He's becoming the Harmison-esque enigma of English cricket. We don't quite know where he's at or what's going to happen with him. But he is undoubtedly the key. And it's worth remembering that I don't know what he is now in terms of the rankings, but 12 months ago he was one of the top three seamers in the world in one-day cricket.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Finn, Broad, Jordan... There's obviously a few ifs and buts, how Jordan progresses, whether Finn can get back to what he was. But that's a decent pace to take in Australian conditions. Yeah, with Stokes then in support. And then Treadwell really could just be a holding bowler.
Okay, well, here we go. We're a year out and we're going to think about the World Cup in Australia. Who would you say is going to win it, and how far will England go? Just call it Rao, Ross.
This is big. You've gone big on this segment, Al.
I like this.
What a finale.
I like to end on a crescendo for this segment.
Well, do you know what? Looking at certain players like Wonder Faulkner, who I've dubbed him, Wonder Faulkner.
Oh, yeah. A moment for James Faulkner. Yeah. I mean, he gets right under England's skin and therefore the supporters, but he's an impressive
guy. He's a good guy,
isn't he?
Sand and the Fury with Faulkner, yeah. Yeah, I can't stand him, which obviously is proof.
He's doing something right.
Yeah, Worcestershire, can we have him, please? And some other great players on their home turf, I would throw them out in the ring for Australia.
And how far are England going to go?
I think they might do all right. I do think we've got a good batch of young players. I think in this series, one thing that's been hilarious is we always try and tell people we're playing our first team when we're actually playing our second team.
Yeah.
Australia seem very keen to tell you that they're playing their second team when they're actually playing
or
their first team.
Third team, as someone said.
The emerging team is New Zealand. Have you seen anything from out there against India? They have in this character Corey Anderson.
Great player.
A terrifying player. He's another one. He's big. He's broad. He fits into that kind of Finch category. You know, he gives it a hit. He's probably carrying a little bit of timber and he hits it absolutely miles. He hit 122 metres in making 70 from no time at all last week. They've got a good looking side in one day.
It's also a bigotry before every world tournament to describe New Zealand as
the dark horse.
This is right. This is right.
Australia to win it, New Zealand in the final.
And England?
England are... quarterfinals knocked out by Pakistan.
Yeah, there they get their standard.
What about you, Joe?
I'm going India to win it, even though their bowling attack isn't particularly suited to Australia. I just think they'll score so many runs that they'll just win a lot of high scoring matches. And I think England maybe semis.
They do well for the semis, isn't it? It's a bit like the World Cup in the football, isn't it? If England make the semis, everyone will be satisfied.
Go out and bowl out. That'd be excellent.
I'd take that.
Well, it's over a year, but we're about a year away from the World Cup in Australia. And it's also my birthday, so it's been a year since my last birthday. And so, you know, a few thoughts have been crossing my mind recently.
Sure.
And I've been thinking, Ross, how do you measure a year? How do you measure a year? Okay, moving on swiftly, let's go on to the big five, gentlemen. The big five.
Yeah.
These are the five great batsmen of the modern era, are they?
Mm-hmm.
One of them's an all-rounder, isn't he?
Oh.
Yeah, but let's just leave the irritation that Callis also took 300-odd test wickets and just look at the five of them with the bat.
Okay, can Callis compete as a batsman alone?
I think he has to, yeah. I think he has to. Firstly, just to explain, the upcoming issue, we've framed it around a look at the big five in light of Callis' retirement in December. We've run 20 pages on it and we've run a series of essays about each figure. So Sachin, Dravid, Lara, Ponting, Callis. Five beautiful essays as well, I have to say that. All held together by a beautiful intro by John Houghton, who runs the old Batsman blog, which everybody in the world has to read. And we also crunched the numbers, or rather got Travis, who created the stats guru at Element of Crick Info, to crunch the numbers.
Yeah.
And we weren't being overly concerned with comparing and contrasting, because so much of it comes down to taste.
Yeah.
But just to appreciate the five of them over their era, an era that will never be repeated ever again. Truly a one-off period in cricket's history. From the time that Tendulkar made his debut to the time Callis retired, just as many test matches were played in that slot as in the 120 years beforehand.
No.
That is a daddy of all stats.
Say 120, 110 actually.
Wow. But anyway,
so it's an interesting piece of work, and it looks lovely as well. Our designer's done a bang-up job on it. And yeah, it's interesting. I mean, the game is moving so fast these days that already these five look like classicists, and whose techniques and approaches were formulated on different grounds to modern players. And and so it's in that kind of spirit. It's slightly misty-eyed, it's a bit nostalgic, it's unabashedly sentimental, but it's also a beautiful piece of work. We'll never see it ever again.
Oh, geez,
the last of the five has roared its last.
I'll tell you what though, they made a bit of a mistake, didn't they?
Missing out?
Because, no, not missing out anyone. They just should have called it the Big One and had it as Brian Lara. Because to my mind, it's no competition.
Really?
It's no competition. Whether you're talking about stats or whether you're talking about brutality or whether you're talking about craft, the reason is it's sentimentality from my perspective, because I saw him in the nets before the Oval Test in 2000 and I'd never seen anything like it. That's a backlift that was like a golf swing and a perfect arc.
I think Lara undoubtedly, for me anyway, comes out of it with the greatest Hollywood innings of the five. Mm. When you think about the five of them, so Callis and Ponting in particular, they just scored so many runs that you almost get lost in the runs. But whereas with Lara, there are four or five sensational moments. And I'm not just talking about the 400 and the 375, but the 150 to win to beat Australia at Bridgetown in 99 is one of the all-time great innings. And that followed on from a double hundred the week before when the West Indies were 30 for four. Facing an innings defeat. They won that game by 10 wickets. So there's a handful of innings from Lara that I tend to agree with you, elevate him. Mm. But then there's other issues at work as well. Longevity, role within the side, perceived selfishness as a player, and so on.
But there's also, I mean, there's Sachin always gets talked about as having the burden of expectation of a nation on his shoulders. But he had a fairly decent side to play with most of the time, which Lara didn't really at any stage. He came in just at the end, didn't he? Just as at the end of that strong team. But there's some really good stats thrown up, and the fascinating thing about it is you read three of these tables that Travis had put together and you're like, oh well, he's definitely the best, and then something else will come up and show it, and just the circumstances. But Lara, the one that stood out for Lara is his record when West Indies were behind in a series, which he had plenty of experience in. He averaged 58 when West Indies were behind in the series, the next closest being Ponting with 53. Then you get down to Dravid, who's on 47. So on that, which is quite a significant stat, I think, as well, particularly for someone who's been playing in a lowly side, just what Lara did for the West Indies.
At the risk of derailing all of this, who was the better bowler, Ponting or Tendulkar?
Sachin had the golden arm, I would say. Ponting threw a few down, got a few couple more English whippers.
I've obviously excluded Callis from that, and I don't recollect Lara bowling, in fact.
No, he did. No, he got Nasser out in an ODI, Lara.
Really?
Filthy leggers, obviously. That would be
standard.
Yeah. Nasser caught and bowled, I think he was, as well.
I'm very much looking forward to reading the Big Five. I'm salivating at the prospect.
Well, I mean,
let me throw this stat in as well, because it's another good talking point. So Travis, this is a good one actually. So he works out their records, the record of each of the five, when the collective average of the opposition bowling attack was less than 30.
Yeah.
So you're playing against the very best.
I like it. Good.
So Ponting comes out on top here,
right?
With 49, averaging 49 against attacks who average less than 30 collectively. Then you're going to Callis, 47, Lara, 45, and then interestingly, drop to Tendulkar is 35, and Dravid, 33.
No.
Which is...
Flat track bullies.
This is it.
Are they?
But then, to counter my own point, this is why it's so much fun doing it.
Stat on stat.
But Dravid, another one was their records when the match average of batsmen was below 25, so a really difficult pitch. At which point, Dravid comes out on top with an average of 35. Ponting down to 25.
Dravid's back up. It's bemusing, isn't it? And it's all about timing of
your
time. You're
timed out there,
well.
Alex, aren't you? You're thinking about your birthday meal later.
You're thinking about the cake.
I was thinking about the film that I went to see on my birthday weekend this weekend. I went to see Inside Llewyn Davis.
Yeah, I saw that.
Everyone did not bother watching that film.
Oh, that's great.
It wasn't made by the Coen brothers. Oh, really? It wouldn't have been allowed out.
It was great. Oh. That was fantastic.
Don't go out
fantastic.
On Saturday night.
I absolutely disagree. Couldn't disagree
more. Well, I'm going to trust you again and watch it.
Yeah, do.
Why trust him?
Well, because I like the Coen brothers.
And so do I.
And you haven't got an artistic bone in
your
body.
You know what it is?
It's all about being an artist.
It's because he's got smaller eyes.
I have a closer affinity.
You'd follow him into anything because he's got smaller eyes.
I've got smaller eyes. That's the way it works.
The leader of men.
Well, it's very dramatic music for a very serious topic. We've got a pair of number sixes that we're going to dissect now. Let's get cricket specific and let's talk about England number six, Stokes, who you got to interview just the other day, Phil Walker, and we'll come back to that in a moment. And also the contrasting fortunes with his opposite number, George Bailey, who's been dropped from the Australian Test side. Ross, I know that you enjoy the Australian cricket podcast as much as I do.
Very much so.
With Menners.
Oh, I do indeed.
Yeah, and we listen to it religiously, and they are very keen on Bailey. Can't understand with the first-class record form of the replacements, Doolan and Marsh, what the hell Bailey's done wrong. Would you agree with that, Joe?
I thought first-class record form, I thought Doolan's form is very strong. I know his overall career record isn't great, but
last couple of years have been good. Yeah,
it's hard to make too strong a case for Bailey when he said himself that he was right to be dropped. I mean, he said, look, fair enough.
He's just too nice. He's too much
of a good man. He's too much of a nice guy.
The thing is, I mean, he's obviously susceptible to decent fast bowling outside off stump, which he's going to get a lot of in South Africa. So I think they probably have made the right decision. I didn't see him succeeding. We've had Tom Moody as a columnist over the Ashes before a match was played. He said, Bailey, great bloke, love him to do well, but I just don't see it in Test cricket. And really, the only positive things he did in the series, other than being great in the dressing room, which everyone is obviously at pains to point out the whole time, was smashing Jimmy for 28 in an over, which isn't really necessarily boosting your Test credentials in that sense. Mm. And the other option is, I mean, Faulkner's out there.
Yeah.
And
he batted number six at the over.
And also, Haddon batting the way he is.
Yep.
Haddon, Faulkner, 6-7, Faulkner, Haddon. You can get away with that and have the extra bowler, particularly if Watson, I mean, looks increasingly reluctant in Test cricket to bowl, although is still fairly effective.
Yeah.
So I'd say they've made the right decision. It's a tough one, but winning teams have got to be ruthless, and the great Australian sides were always ruthless in the past.
I think it's an ominously impressive decision.
Oh, interesting. Okay, well, almost a tribute to Anchorman, did Phil Hughes take out the coach's daughter and then not pick up the cheque? Is that what's happened here? Because what's he done?
Obviously not.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Yeah. So what do you think of that one, that selection then, Phil?
Phil Hughes is an easy player to love, isn't he? And he's the kind of player you want to see succeed because he's unique. From what people have told me who have seen them play a lot more than I have, Doolan is a real stylish, classical-looking right-hander who they like. And from what I gather, from what Tom Moody said, essentially, I think he's being earmarked to maybe go in at number three and then move Watson down to number six. That, to me, looks like a pretty impressive top six and pretty strong-looking side. Hughes may well feature again, and when Rogers moves on in a year or so's time, he's 36, Hughes may well come in there, and then that makes a fascinating, wild, freewheeling opening partnership of Warner and him. And if it's not going to be him, then it may well be Finch, who looks like a fine player as well.
Absolutely.
With Australia, they're suddenly in this position of strength, in as much as they can now drop a player who hadn't disgraced himself by any means in Bailey, but and who will have go down with a test career potentially of five Ashes games and five wins, and thanks for coming.
Would England have dropped Bailey?
They
wouldn't have done it.
In this instance, absolutely not, no.
Would England, at the height of their powers in 2010, drop Bailey?
Well, Collingwood was the equivalent in the last Ashes when they were almost as dominant as Australia were over us, and Collingwood couldn't buy a run, and they refused not only to drop him, but put him down to six, even though Bell was batting like a god. And Collingwood couldn't middle it. They decided that was the formula that worked for them, and they stuck.
I think it's an excellent point, Alex, that you make.
Thank you very much, Phil. But I think that'll do. Should we end the show? So let's go.
Birthday point. It's a good point on your birthday.
Birthday.
Listen,
lovely.
But didn't they drop Morgan in a winning team who was batting at six and scoring okay runs, playing impressive shots?
Well, they'd lost 3-0, hadn't they? They'd lost 3-0 in the UAE when he was dropped.
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah.
All right. That's a bad point.
That's a bad point.
I did a good point.
It's not my birthday.
Bad point. Phil, talking about number sixes and contrasting fortunes, you had the opportunity of speaking to Ben Stokes.
Yeah, well, we can't pass through one of these podcasts without talking about him, can we?
Yeah, because he's really good.
Potential best all-rounder in the world, trademark.
Yes, we went to print on Tuesday night last week, and I was lucky enough to talk to him over the phone on Tuesday morning. It was late where he was in New Zealand, but he'd phoned me, and we had a good half-hour chat. And he's a seriously imposing young lad, really. And the way that there's a kind of a clarity to the way that he thinks about the world that going on around him, you know, which is really, really impressive and kind of bodes well, I think, for where he's going to go. He's not overly flowery. He's not overly bothered about articulating or indeed swerving, you know, in a kind of media trained way questions. He just answers them straight. Right from the head. And the way that he plays his cricket, I think, is replicated in the way that he carries
particularly
himself.
Particularly the send-offs.
Yeah,
he's a fan of a send-off, isn't he?
Fulton started it, didn't he?
Did he?
I think so.
Yeah, you know, if an England player after, you know, when you're 8-0 down or whatever is, can't tell an Aussie to F off, then there's a problem.
And he was the one bloke that could get away with it in that England squad, wasn't he? That he'd earned enough of a right to tell one someone to say that.
Yeah,
he got the better of a few. That was a beautiful moment, I thought.
But what you say about Stokes, there's probably a lesson in you're describing as having an uncluttered mind, just goes out there and plays it straight, talks straight. It's probably a lesson in there for the England coaching setup to work out what he's good at and not try and change too much.
Yeah, he also mentioned Borthwick as well, and I wasn't aware of this, but those two are bosom buddies, and Borthwick is godfather to Stokes' little lad. And they grew up, obviously, in the Durham ranks together, but they are thick as thieves, those two. And Stokes was describing what Borthwick was like, and you'll see that in the piece in the magazine. He says he's the most energetic and sparkiest character he's ever met, and Stokes would say this, but he's convinced that Borthwick has a place in international cricket. It's a dream, and at the moment it's a distant one, but how great would it be to have a kind of cheeky maverick leggy, the best all-rounder in the world, and those two being, you know, having grown up together and got into all kinds of scrapes.
What's Borthwick like at ODI level or, you know, List A level?
That's where he got his first break with England. But and he's bowled really... He bowls really well. This was actually... Mark Butcher pointed this out about him. He said he's seen him on Sky Sports a lot, and he loves bowling at the depth, which is odd for a leg spinner, and Durham trust him enough to throw him the ball at the end, and he relishes it. And he goes for a few runs, but he takes a few wickets. And this is what we were talking about earlier with the ODI side, whether England are willing to take a risk on a player like Borthwick in one-day cricket, or whether they stick with Treble. With Giles as coach, I know which one I guess they do.
Well, that's very exciting. That's Stokes, that's Bailey, that's Borthwick.
That's the number six.
Guys, you've got something very exciting also in the new issue. It's a round table, isn't it, Joe?
It is. We've decided to canvas some opinion from people who know English cricket to decipher where England should go from here. So we've lined up Mark Butcher, Paul Collingwood, Angus Fraser, George De Bell, and our own Phil Walker.
A steam team.
And ask them the important questions that need answering. Is Flower the right man to take England forward? Is Cook the right man to captain England? Is their style of play going to be able to win some test matches, or do they need to start having a more aggressive approach? And it's actually, it's come together really nicely. I think it's a piece of work we're all quite proud of. So definitely worth looking out for in the next issue.
But all of that pales into insignificance compared to the new top 10.
Wow. Well, do you know, I'm far too modest a character to mention our own writing, but we do have a feature in the next issue.
We do indeed. It's called The 10. It's 10 great cricketers' other jobs, Al. How was it for you writing it? Pressured?
It was pretty intense, actually.
God,
tears were shed.
Oh,
yes.
You should have been there in that
sweat
room.
Sweat was sweated.
We locked ourselves in a hotel room. We didn't come out for a week.
None of our business.
And then we did the 10 afterwards. It had nothing to do. The two things were not.
Look out for it next week.
Next week.
Seasons of love. See you alive. See you alive.